Hello, welcome to Isawellan Writes. I had an idea late in the night last night that I wanted to read something from my work in progress. Not something, like the first couple of chapters. And I thought, how would I share this with the world? And I have an old Podbean account, and I thought I would try doing a podcast. There might be other formats that are easier to share this with, but when I looked it up and checked, you know, how do I upload an MP3 to YouTube or Facebook or some such thing, I realized that I'm old and I need simple, and this is what I had, and so this is simple. So I'm working on a new story. I've realized as I work on this that a lot of my stories have a lot of similarities to other stories, but I do have a type when it comes to what I read and what I write. That is definitely for sure, and I hope that people enjoy it, even though it's a type. My new story contains magic, not necessarily witchcraft magic, but there are otherworldly magic. It's a fantasy. It takes place in a whole new world. I like to create new worlds. Even when I need to go back and finish old worlds, I'm always creating new worlds. So, and it's also told in first person, which I don't do a lot of reading or writing in, but I thought I would try that as well. So this is chapter one from Work in Progress, Anya. I felt them coming in the soles of my feet. Checked the old watch I'd started wearing. The analog dial glowed 10 after midnight. The first time I'd felt this, I thought I was allergic to something in my shoes. This weird, vibrating, itching feeling in my feet. It didn't hurt none, but it was a distracting feeling that demanded attention. I'd had to sit down, take off my socks and shoes, and see what was going on. 3 days going without a decent wash, my feet stunk, but they weren't red or swollen from anything. By the time I got everything back on, my palms buzzed. I was sitting on a single chair in the corner where Jack kept the brooms and mops, looking at my hands like an idiot. I never got sick. What was wrong with me? Had I touched something, washed in something? And the smell! I lifted my head, wondering at the sudden warm smell filling the room. It reminded me of fire, but it wasn't. Fire smells what it's burning. Wood, plastic, the crap used to make buildings, accelerant. I never thought it could smell good, but this fire, it got me off of the off my butt in the back when I should have been getting ready to do my nightly drugs work. It took me outside. Nose in the air, I sniffed, following that unique, one-of-a-kind burning incense and fire smell. And it led me right to the hellhounds. Ever since that first time, I could feel them coming, and each time I'm more aware. I'd started timing it. It was hard to focus on the job in front of me. I rushed through washing the mess of plates, forks, and knives and glasses. I was supposed to keep the glasses separate. Such a waste of time and energy. Since Jack was busy up front serving drinks, I ignored the rule. He came around the corner and boxed me right over the left ear when he saw it. Shoulders caving, I winced at the painful blow. Girl, how many times have I told you? How stupid are you? You can't wash dishes. Get those plates out of there, wash the rest of the glasses, and get them back up front. I have no trouble washing dishes. I just think your way is wrong, I told him. He stopped what he was doing, turned, and yanked me by the arm. His thick fingers squeezed hard. Always that sass and bull from you. Think you're too good for the likes of Jack's place? You're a female with three holes. If you can't work here, I told Bradonna that you could work in the back. Grimacing at the pain he doled out, I readied a reply guaranteed to get me into more trouble when one of the waitresses stuck her head around the corner. Jack, problem with the customer? He shook me again for good measure. Wash them glasses separate. You break it, you buy it. You scratch it, you buy it. Hired after the last worker disappeared, a week into this job, I'd stopped wondering why he couldn't keep people. The average pay was just that, average. But it was pay in a place where jobs were scarce. My stepsister, Bradonna, dragged me in here and told him I'd be a good worker. He took me on and treated me more like a slave than an employee, smacking me with his open hand on my ears, grabbing my arms, and yanking on my hair whenever I did anything he didn't like. Pretty sure I have a personality disorder or something. The more he tried to boss me, the more I did stupid stuff he didn't like. It was a compulsion in me, a reaction I couldn't stop. So now my arms were always black and blue, and I often went home with my left ear hurting. Bradonna said that I should do her job, and then we'd get a better flat and live like queens, sleep late in the morning and be up all night, a job on my back and on the stage. I didn't have a great body or the confidence to show it off. Not that I aspired to that. Nope. I had no intention of living the life of an invisible kitchen worker. When I told her I'd rather die than do her type of work, she sneered at me, pretty face going tight, and brought me here. Told me if I wanted to eat, I'd work. I didn't mind. I cleaned up homes and did other dirty labor, finding work as a day servant in the better parts of New Indio when I could. Bradonna's idea of being queen meant getting naked and other things I wanted no part of. I went back over the glasses in case Jack came back. Working the old man's kitchen fulfilled the need for food as the best option until a better idea came up. I needed a better idea to appear soon. Getting out of this town was on my list of things to do as soon as possible. There was not a lot of option for females without protectors in New Indio. I don't have some talent or skill that I could trade, and my feminine side had become much more difficult to disguise from all the lawless men taking up space in a backwater, forgotten place. At least there'd been no worthwhile talent until the hellhounds. I could almost feel their heat, a brush against my cheeks before I inhaled their smell. A pack of seven, my pack of seven, two females, five males. Inside the building, the steam from the water, the alcohol, the inhalants, the body odor, smells of the other room, old food and wet concrete, all that was Jack's place didn't drown out their presence. I didn't know why or how, but I was connected to the magical beasts. I looked at my watch, 25 minutes. I'd had a warning they were cunning 25 minutes before their arrival. It wasn't just their proximity I could sense, but I knew they were coming right here to me, as happy and as eager as I was. Finishing up the mess in front of me, I ran the still hot trays of glasses out to the bar on the trolley and rushed through shelving them. Back in the kitchen before Jack could see me, the sound of his boisterous yelling at his customers ringing in my ears over the thump of stripper music. He was a different man in the main room, a jovial bartender and cook, friend to all. I went to the cold space and grabbed the bones I'd stashed. Jack had noticed they'd gone missing, but since I hadn't actually removed them from the premises, that wasn't stealing, was it? When he asked, I was able to say honestly that they must be here somewhere. Outside in the alley, sitting on their haunches between three sleek black and silver motorbikes, were the shadowy shapes of the hounds. I waited until the bike owners, three big men, disappeared around the corner. In the months that I'd been getting to know the pack, I'd managed to avoid the dangerous men they ran with. Bradonna, at 23 years old, with her young and tight body, would be called to dance for them, and they'd be busy a bit. That's all I cared about. Seven, the alpha female, was watching for me, her ears perked. I couldn't really see them in this place. My human eyes had troubles with nighttime shadows and blurred lines of their forms, playing tricks with my vision. But just like that buzz in my hands and feet and their smell, I could feel them, each distinct, brilliant life form, ferocious, powerful, and amazing. They were the most incredible creatures I'd ever seen. Under their master's command, they stayed by the bikes, unnoticed, mostly. I'd been out here with them when some drunk fool stumbled this way, curious about the expensive transport machines. This was not a part of town, and this was not a good part of town, and desperation made men into fools. The drunk swung around the corner, drawn to the shiny chrome like pipes of the vehicles, and froze, drawn up short as if running into a wall. Pissed himself right there. I heard it and smelled it. Then he backed away, mouth opening and closing like he'd seen a nightmare. Hellhounds were the things of nightmares, people said. I pulled out my bone offerings and Seven changed shape for me into a big, beautiful black hound. She gave me a friendly doggy grin. I thought she'd be big enough for me to ride. She was so massive. Her sleek, black head twice the size of mine. Most of her head was made up of teeth. With a whine, she pawed the gravel, waiting for my approach. Oh my, I missed you, girl. Missed you so much. You guys have been gone a week. Is everything okay? Everything all right? I rushed to them, putting the bones in front of Seven. She was young for an alpha, but her dominance couldn't be denied. I'd let her decide who got what. Unable to wait another moment, I buried my face in her neck and wrapped my arms around her for a full body hug. Warm and plush, her smell and presence gave me a sense of rightness that I could never find in my own skin. Longtail, her alpha male counterpart, came up behind me, head over my shoulder, licking my face. It was more weird stuff because I could hear them when we touched. They didn't think in words, but sometimes I had a sense of pictures and simple, clear-cut feelings. This is how I knew. This is how I knew that one of the males, Shade, was hurt and needed help. This is how I knew to go to him, take the little utility knife from my pocket, and make a slice where it would get nice and bloody so that he could lick it up. Seven had asked me to do it before, last time for Longtail, and I hadn't hesitated. The idea of their suffering made my heart hurt. The hounds had healing abilities, and I knew in the earthly sense they couldn't die, but they could be wounded and weakened, and their master never did anything about it as far as I could tell. What the fuck are you doing? Jumping at the sharp crack of a man's voice, I glared at Seven. Why didn't you tell me they were coming? Seven and Longtail ducked their heads guiltily and turned to red-eyed Shadow. They looked too guilty. Did you know they were coming back? I asked, voice rising. My friends betrayed me? Why? Unless they'd been forced to. Had he forced them? I pet Shade while he licked me, felt him turn to Shadow under my hands while his long pink tongue still worked at my wrist. He'd been shot earlier. The dark voice spoke again. I asked you a question, girl. Shade slunk away. People were terrified of his head, of the hellhounds. Me, I was only terrified of the owner of that voice, a law unto himself. Calix Argus was not a male to be crossed. He didn't box ears when he got angry. He stomped faces, cut throats, and fed the remains to the hounds. I was dressed as a boy, my hair all tucked into a bun at the base of my neck under a knit cap because I was too vain to cut it. My clothes, men's stuff I'd stolen from Badonna's father's years ago, baggy and patched and restitched, but they covered everything. Apparently, my attempted androgyny had failed. With no ready answer for him, the hunter stepped forward with suspicion-filled aggression, and the hounds answered that, surging around me, making noises of confusion, protecting me like one of their own. They went solid, and behind me I could feel Longtail grow. Hellhounds had three shapes, one for hunting, one for living, and one for killing. It would not be good for anyone if Longtail took his killing shape. I'd heard they couldn't shift back from that without actually killing something. With no idea what their master would do to them, I couldn't let them defend me. I loved that they tried, though. My heart swelled, feeling a little possessive. He may have collared them, but they loved me enough to stand against him. No, I shouted, not looking behind me. I spoke to the hounds like children, like friends. It's okay. He's not going to hurt me. It's okay. You're not going to hurt me, are you, Mr. Argus? Shush now, babies. It's all right. Heart pounding abnormally fast from the threat this man posed, I tried to take deep breaths to calm myself. Don't punish them, okay? I'm not doing anything. Shade was hurt. He got shot, right? Well, it was worse than you thought. Seven asked me to help, so I helped, okay? The light out here was not good. I couldn't see his expression. But him and his men, they gave off not happy vibes in waves. I continued to talk. Don't punish them. It's not their fault. I buttered them up with some good soup bones. No dog can resist a good bone, right? I like animals. Saw them out here when I was taking out the trash. Brought a treat. I don't have enough for all of them. One of the other men snorted, a familiar eye-rolling disbelief sound that I couldn't see his expression, I was well aware what accompanied it. It was my favorite expression, too. The hunter said something in a rolling language I didn't recognize. It made my feet itch. A command to the hounds, I thought, as they moved away from me. I hated that. I hated that he told them what to do. Must force it with that collar on Seven and Magic. It felt wrong to me that anyone should force or control these incredible beasts. He didn't deserve them. He let one get hurt and not taken care of it, made them run with him for miles without stopping, and then came here to this podunk bar. Calix and his two friends went inside to get their rocks off, watch and use the strippers, probably my sister included, and just leave the hounds outside in the cold after making them work since dark with no reward. The hunter's hand curled around my upper arm, and he shoved me in the direction of his two pals. "Inside," he said. They dragged me inside. I tried to look behind me to figure out what he was doing, but they moved around the corner too fast, dragging me in through the front door, within Jack's direct line of sight. Oh, damn. There went the job. Jack's bar had several rooms. The main one with the strippers, a few small closet-side rooms for private shows, and a banquet room with a dancing island and table and the best lighting. This was the room we went to. Jack followed us in. There were all kinds of Jack faces. This one was new. I'd never seen him nervous, but now his broad face looked worried for his life while his hands gripped together in a parody of prayer. "Gentlemen, is something wrong? Has the girl done something? Anya, why weren't you in the kitchen? What have you done?" I didn't know the gentlemen's names. One was blonde with blue eyes and an oiled beard, a scar bisecting his bottom lip, the other one clean-shaven, wearing a knit cap like mine, with metal studding his ears and other parts of his face. They were both big, muscled types, the kind of bad I preferred to avoid. Blonde guy said, "Bring whiskey, food. I think we're going to be here a while. Calix will want to talk to you." Changing colors, Jack's broad face went red, white, then red again. "I assure you," he started. Metal guy interrupted, "Get the fucking food." "Yes, yes, and whiskey." They shoved me in a chair in the corner. One of them took my hat. My head jerked around to find it in Metal guy's hands. "You're going to be dead if you manage to hurt the hounds, little witch. You know that, right?" I didn't know what was more outrageous, being called a witch or the idea that I'd hurt the hounds. I sputtered, "Not a witch, you thug. Let me go. I didn't do anything, and I gotta get back to work or I'll get fired. I'll lose my job." "How old do you think she is?" Blondie asked over my head. I tried to stand up. One hand on my shoulder, Metal guy pushed me back down. Jeez, the bulk wasn't just for show then. It worked. The question of age disturbed me. There was only one reason to ask something like that. It was a universal law among outlaws, maybe everywhere, not to touch an Indiagio woman until she came of age. She's a baby one way or another. Look in them eyes. Does she even know who we are? The trouble she's in? Middle guy asked. As if I wasn't sitting right there in a chair close enough to touch them and be touched. I'm looking at them eyes, that face, that mouth, sweet as sugar. "Think we'll get a taste?" Blondie said with a lazy, speculative growl. Drawl. I'd been a little scared up until then, but now fear poured down over me like ice water, and my mouth opened in response. "Sweet as sugar, you think? You forget I have teeth? I'm not deaf, you idiot. Sitting right here. If you think you... give you a taste of anything except my rage, then you had better think again. I didn't do anything. I was helping." I said it slow so the monolithic morons could figure it out. These two weren't ugly. I wish they were. Even with this scar, Blondie had a thin-lipped, well-put-together face, and Metal guy was almost boyish under all his piercings. One of the studs was in a dimple that flashed at my bold words. Why were dangerous men always so good-looking, always well-built? They looked me over with amusement. "He's gonna love her," Metal guy said. The other guy, Blondie, gave a mock frown. Don't think we'll be getting a taste of this one too soon. He'll want that smart mouth all to himself. This town, this world, was not a good place for women. It used them up and spit them out. My stepsister, she didn't seem to care. She thought she would use her boobs and her ass to use the world right back, to make it pay her rather than take from her. I didn't want to have anything to do with that. Hoped to avoid it, put it off as long as possible. Covering up, keeping hidden, working for pennies had served me well so far. In one night, it was all crashing down. I'd caught the intention of three powerful males. If one of them didn't want to use me up, there were two others, happily, waiting in line. There was a knock on the wall, and there she was, Bradonna, holding a tray of drinks and a bottle of whiskey. Taller than me, but 10 pounds lighter, she had a dancer's shape. Her boobs jiggled just enough, didn't get sloppy like mine did without her bra. Her hips were slim, and her thighs didn't touch. Her makeup gave her longer lashes, but her eyebrows had been plucked to nothing. I didn't think the thick ones she painted in quite fit her face, but didn't dare say so. Wearing gold panties and a sheer skirt with high-heeled shoes and nothing else, the tray in her hand and her hair down her back covered her up more than her clothing. I was told you gentlemen were thirsty and to give you anything you want. She walked into the room with the grace and suggestion on those towering hills, looking hopeful at what they wanted would be her. The heels put her at chin level with them. Coming in close to Blondie, who was closest to me, she cocked her hip in a way that made her butt stick out in his direction. "Hello, Gage." "Hello, Donna girl." His hand answered the invitation, smoothing over the round globe. "Ugh." I looked away from that. Sitting the tray down, she asked, "Why is the little kitchen rat in here? Send her back. We can have some fun." "No. Out, Bradonna." The hunter had to duck through the doorway. He stepped to the side, waiting for her to leave. Bradonna had talked about Calyx enough for me to know they'd slept together, or, well, no sleeping had been involved. She called him bossy and masterful. He was just Bradonna's type, the sugar daddy she wanted to take care of her and provide for her. Her bottom lip made an exaggerated pout. I had to close my eyes to keep from rolling them at the act. Heartless and mercenary to her core, that girl did not cry or pout. "Don't you want to play, sir?" Nothing in the hunter's body or face suggested playfulness. Bigger than the other two, this was my first up-close sight of Calyx Argus. I had made a careful habit of seeing the back of him and staying out of his way whenever he came to Jack's. Other than his friends, there was little salt in the stubble on the cut of his jaw. His pale gray eyes were hard and uncompromising under dark lowered brows, and his lips didn't soften at all as they passed over Bradonna and waited for her to leave. He wasn't going to give her no sugar tonight, it looked like. The thought shouldn't please me as much as it did. I was not in competition for this man's favor. Bradonna didn't say anything. She didn't defend me, claim me, ask for mercy, nothing. We'd lived together for the last 5 years, two of them with my parents and three of them getting by on our own, living in my mother's flat, scraping for everything we had. We didn't like each other, but if our places had been reversed, I would have stood up for her. I know I would have. She didn't say anything. Her chin lowered with her downcast eyes, and she left. So this recording is at about 24 minutes. I wonder if that's long enough for one podcast at a time. I know it is very unprofessional. I'm not going to go back and edit out all those little stumbles because that would take hours. This is meant as just a work in progress. And even as I was reading through it aloud, I saw a lot of editing mistakes because I do that. That's just how I roll as a writer, even though I've read it aloud before to myself. Now that it's recording, of course, I find all the mistakes. Let me know what you think. I'd love to hear if you'd like to hear more of the story read by me, or if you just want to read it yourself, or if you think I should write something different. Thanks for listening.